You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner, along with my co-host, Will Lomas, as always. And we're back to recap another Titans win and preview their next game, which will be on Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. Biggest game of the season, I would say. The Bills won. Came a little bit too early in the season. The Titans were still kind of figuring out who they were, and it was clear that the Bills were a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Plus, it was in Buffalo, so I think this is the biggest game of the season so far. But before we get into all that and recap the Titans' win over the Texans, I think we should talk a little bit about some of the trade deadline deals that went down. Were you expecting the Titans to make a move, or do you think it was kind of expected for John Robinson to stay put, especially given some of the values that I think some teams kind of overpaid a little bit for some of these players. And I know Titans fans always want the team to make a move to get the team to be better in certain positions, but I don't think there was really anything out there for the Titans to make that really would have made sense.
Yeah, I would never expect the Titans to make a trade in season because I can't remember. I guess Desmond King, they did that one year, which worked out really well. He was good, and they got more in comp pick than they traded away for him. I don't know. It was one of those trade deadlines where, you know, first of all, things happened, which, you know, never really happens. It's a lot of smoke, but apparently teams were motivated to trade players. You heard a lot of rumors that they're interested in edge rushers. You know, if Brian Burns wasn't on the table, I don't really know who I would have given anything up for. Like, trading a first and change for Chubb just to pay him $20 million a year, which is, you know, what the rumor is that Miami's going to give him. That's tough to stomach. Like, I don't think I could get behind that. Even, you know, and I wrote this article about Brian Burns weeks ago because I don't hate the idea of trading for an edge, even if you have to give up a first-round pick, if it's somebody you like, because you could essentially, as much as people don't like talking about cutting Autry, you know, say you could trade him or restructure or whatever. There's a lot of money to be had in dealing with either cutting or trading or whatever, Autry and Dupree. Like, that, there's something like $20 million of cap space to be made there. So you could essentially trade, like, you know, Burns was apparently not on the block. I don't believe the rumor that they turned down 2 1s from the Rams. Like, Albert Breer said that.
That's insane.
Albert Breer said that, and I still don't believe it. So, you know, maybe they did. If they did, they're insane. Because, you know, the rumor was that it was 2 firsts from the Rams, and the reason why it was 2 firsts is because it would be 2024 and 2025, because you can trade that far out, but because they don't have their first this year because they traded it with Jared Goff to get Matthew Stafford, blah, blah, blah. Still, you don't ignore 2 first-round picks. like, especially if you need a quarterback and you're a bad team and the team that's, you know, trying to trade with you has like 3 wins this year. So that seems crazy to me. But anyway, I think you, if you have somebody like that, like a young Pro Bowl, you know, who edge who doesn't want to be where he is, yeah, like move a first. You can make the money and cap space up with other moves, and then you have 4 guys on the defensive line who are all Pro Bowlers or really good players, and T.R. Tart, Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry, and insert whatever young pass rushers there. Other than that, I didn't really think a move on defense made sense. The rumor is that Jerry Jeudy could have been had for a 2nd and a 5th, and Benjamin Albright basically confirmed that earlier today. So I'm partial to Jerry Jeudy. I think when you watch his tape in college and when you watch his like rookie year, like you can see why he's so coveted, and you can understand why with what went on at quarterback and with the offense there in Denver, why he hasn't been as productive compared to somebody like Chase Claypool, who, I mean, I don't want to make like big sweeping assumptions, but he seems to have off the field stuff based on, I think it was Jacina Anderson maybe who tweeted about that, about how the Steelers were ready to get rid of him and there was stuff in the locker room that, you know, he just didn't fit there anymore. And they kind of have a habit of drafting those guys and Mike Tomlin doing a really good job keeping them under wraps and seeming like normal people until they're out, you know, on another team. So I thought that was good value, especially when you have 2.5 years of cost control. Like, that would keep you from needing to draft a receiver this next year with Treylon Burks, Kyle Phillips, Jeudy, and then Woods already under, you know, that group of 4 seems like it would have been enough. But there was not a trade that I saw yesterday that I was like, man, I really wish the Titans were in on that. And, you know, I didn't expect them to, and I understand why they didn't do it. So, I mean, we'll see what happens from here on out, just whether any of those guys explode. But right now, based on the prices that the people that got moved for, I think this was a pretty smart decision.
Yeah, I agree. I really didn't see too many moves where the Titans should have made or like should have been more in on it. And I really wasn't expecting them to make much of a move. I think maybe an upgraded left tackle would have made sense. I don't know how much that would have cost because I don't think I saw any left tackle get moved from at least from the high profile trades that I saw happen. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like they're just going to keep going with Daly until, I don't know, until there's a cataclysmic disaster, which seems like it might happen. So I don't know. That's okay. I don't think edge rusher was needed. I think if they would have gone for Chubb, I think it would have made more sense to dump Bud Dupree in that trade, but which team was going to take on that contract as compensation in a trade like that? I don't think the Broncos would have done it. And yeah, I mean, Bradley Chubb's injury history is scary, to be frank. Like, I honestly thought it was only the ACL that he had dealt with that had caused him to miss games, but he has missed games almost every season of his career. Like, not what you want to see, especially when, like you said, you have to pay him a huge contract in addition. I think Robert Quinn for a 4th-round pick could have made sense, but he's 32 years old. I still think he could have given you something, but to be a rotational player, a 4th-round pick is kind of rich, in my opinion. So I don't know. I don't know if I really would have done that either. And then I saw some other trades that I was kind of scratching my head at. I like the Bears getting Claypool, but 2nd-round pick seems a little bit steep for me. I thought the Hawkinson compensation was a little too much. I know he has a high draft pedigree and he has flashed at times, but he's super inconsistent. So that was kind of a weird one to me. And then I thought Roquan Smith for a 2nd-round pick for the Ravens, I didn't think that made a lot of sense. I think he's an awesome player, but he's an off-ball linebacker. You're about to have to pay him a market-setting deal, and you gave up a 2nd-round pick for a player who's probably not going to change much on your defense, considering Patrick Queen has been playing really well the last couple of weeks. And given the fact that your secondary is the biggest issue, I don't know what Roquan Smith really does. I think he's a great player, but I don't think he's a defense changing, conference changing type of defensive asset. So I was a little surprised they gave up that much for him. But like we said, it really didn't surprise us that the Titans didn't make a move. And I don't know if they really should have even been in the market for any of these players. So with the trade deadline now out of the way, we can focus on the NFL football itself. And this past weekend, the Titans won their fifth straight game. They ended up beating the Texans 17-10 in Malik Willis's first career start. They didn't need him. They honestly, I think one of us could have been back there behind center, and the Titans would have won this game anyway, because Derrick Henry just, oh my God, man, he is just destroying every defense this season. And we came into this game knowing that the Titans were going to run the ball and an exorbitant amount of times, because the Texans' run defense is just horrific. Like NFL history level bad type of run defense. And the Titans completely exploited it with Derrick Henry. They gave him 32 carries for 219 yards and two touchdowns. Dontrell Hilliard finally got some run. He got 8 carries, got 83 yards, just a ridiculous 10.4 yards per carry, which is what he's shown every time he has touched the ball. He is just an explosive play waiting to happen. And I'm glad they finally got him some run, got Derrick Henry a little bit of rest. It's a little weird that they didn't go to Hassan Haskins for a little bit in this game, but I guess he wasn't really needed. So good win for the Titans, especially with Tannehill out. They really didn't need him. I think we talked about it before that this was the game to play Malik Willis, because he wasn't going to be needed to throw the ball. And it's good that the Titans were able to rest Tannehill, get the win anyway, and then they could focus on getting Tannehill rested up for the Chiefs game.
Yeah, like, the ankle injury seems to be serious enough to where they didn't want to risk it, and I don't even know if he could have gone if they needed him to, but yeah. The Texans' run defense was terrible. You know, they just basically their starting linebacker last year, who looked good, said, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. And they cut him the week of this game. And I don't know. There's nothing good to say about the Houston Texans' defense in general. Like, not that he had a lot of chances to shine, but Stingley, like, I didn't notice him at all, really. And then Jerry Hughes had a sack, but it was one of those sacks where it's just like, in next year, Malik Willis won't take that sack, you know, surely. Like, he just kind of like stood there and stumbled like into the sack, which was, I mean, it was a bad block by Daly, but, you know, once he's used to the speed of the NFL, I don't think he'll let himself get sacked like that. But I don't know. It was all bad. So yeah, like, I don't understand why they didn't run Haskins more, or Hilliard. You know, like you said, like, Haskins, it seemed like he should get some mop-up duty late, but Hilliard, especially since he was averaging 10 yards a carry. But, you know, they've talked a lot about the guys who make the most money having the most responsibility and the most, you know, put on their shoulders. Like, obviously Tannehill, then Derrick Henry, like, getting 30 touches after he already had 200 yards or so at 22 carries. Like, there was no reason for him to go back out there. Then, you know, Robert Woods playing as much as he did and playing special teams. And, you know, there was a lot of that kind of stuff. And, you know, Bud Dupree, ever, you know, as soon as he was off the injury report, he's completely taken over Weaver's snaps. And, you know, Weaver had a back thing that he ended up tweeting about and getting frustrated about. And then, you know, tried to delete the post on Instagram or whatever, where he got fined for missing therapy or whatever you would call that the next day for his back stuff. But, you know, he was scratched for whatever reason, but it didn't matter anyway, because whenever Dupree got back, it was Dupree's show. And then Weaver kind of as necessary, like, getting relegated back to not being a starter, which I don't know if that's fair or not, but it's what's happened. So I would have liked to have seen Hilliard more, just to save Henry's legs, but, you know, he seemed fine, you know, throughout the whole game, and I don't think he is upset about it or anything like that. So, you know, the plan was pretty simple coming in, just to run the ball, and that's what they did.
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything really that we can learn from this Malik Willis start, right? Like, he barely had any responsibilities, and the only times that he actually dropped back to pass, it was kind of a disaster, but it's kind of what we expected, right? Like, we knew he wasn't ready. I think most people knew he wasn't ready. As exciting as the preseason was for him, a lot of it was just completely his athletic ability taking over against players that were going to get cut on defense. Like, he really didn't play against too many defensive starters, and most of his plays were like backyard football type of stuff where he's making crazy throws from cool angles, but against NFL level talent on defense, that was never going to be able to happen, like, at least not yet. It might happen in the future, but it's very clear that he's not ready, and I think this kind of put a nail in the, oh, start him over Tannehill coffin. Like, there's still some people out there that think that's the best course for this season, but it's just not. He's not ready. He's way too green. He needs a lot to learn, and unfortunately, I think he needs to learn it by getting reps, but the Titans are in a position right now where they're leading the AFC South. They're a playoff team, and their Super Bowl window is probably closing. I'm not going to say it's closed yet because the NFL is terrible this year. Anything can happen. But their Super Bowl window is probably within the next couple of seasons with Tannehill before he gets a little bit older and kind of starts breaking down. And the same with Derrick Henry. Given that, there's no way Malik Willis needs to be starting right now. And I think this game kind of showcased why Tannehill is still the guy and why it's not going to happen yet. But is there anything we can take away from this Malik Willis start, or is it just that he's simply not ready to play?
I mean, I think you hit it kind of on the head. Is he's just not, he's not ready to play in the fact that, you know, they gave him two man routes and he couldn't really read those, which is a pretty bad sign. You know, not that he'll never develop, but, you know, I think, I don't know if it was Mike Keith or whoever, but he was talking about how Malik Willis has been the show team quarterback the whole season, which basically means he's like not learning the Titans offense. He's running scout team and he's basically like trying to mimic other teams' offenses. So I don't know if an off season of work, I mean, I do know an off season of work should help him. I don't know if that'll fix this, but you know, maybe that's why he didn't look as comfortable. But no, I mean, nothing he did suggests that he should be the guy at any point this year. You know, even if the Titans lost all the rest of their games, there's nothing that says that there's any reason to play him early. You know, we said it, you know, after the preseason, I don't know that we should expect to see Malik Willis in 2023. Like, he doesn't look like he's, you know, close to ready. It's not like people want to say that he's like an athletic wild card and that if you put him back there, you know, he can scramble and make a big play happen or he can, you know, rip something deep. That's not true. Like, we can watch him right now and you can see that he's not confident in really anything. Like, the Robert Woods pass where he was running to the left, like, he almost got caught by the guys chasing him and he threw and it got tipped and Robert Woods just made a really good catch. Then he missed Chigakonkwo on that, you know, tight end route up down the sideline, which should have been a huge, I mean, you're not going to get more open than that in the NFL. So
there was no touch on that pass. He needed to like take a little bit of velocity off. And I mean, it's something that hopefully will come with time, but I mean, we've comped him to Jake Locker, and Jake Locker never learned that was what you needed to do on those types of throws.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it is a very Jake Locker-esque, like, beginning, where you start off as the backup quarterback, and then I remember they would have packages with Jake Locker where he came out basically as a wildcat quarterback and would run some. I mean, maybe they do something similar with Malik Willis, but the whole jet sweep stuff makes even less sense now because he's not slow, but if you're going to give him a jet sweep, he's not going to outrun anybody. You know, like that, you could see that when he was running the sidelines. He's not pulling away from guys. So, you know,
he's not very fast, is he?
No, he's not.
He doesn't have a lot of straight line speed. It's mostly like quick, agile stuff.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, he's got really good, like, quick twitch, like from planting on your back foot to just going. Like, that's really good. And he's kind of got that acceleration, but he accelerates well, but he doesn't, his top end speed is not there. I mean, we saw it in the preseason where he got chased down by people or he couldn't get the angles he wanted. Like, he kept taking hits. That's why Vrabel would take him out in games, is because he'd start rolling and he would just take a hit. So, I don't know. Like,
I don't want to pile on him, obviously, but
yeah,
I think people, just because he's a running quarterback, it's just go to the Lamar Jackson comparison, and they are totally different runners, like completely different. And Lamar Jackson has speed that's like legitimate, you know, 4.39, 4.4 flat speed. I would say Malik Willis probably runs at what, 4.55 maybe?
No chance.
Not even, right?
He's like 4.7, 4.8. Like, I mean, maybe he's hurt or maybe he's just is unsure and that's why he looks slow. But I mean, no, like Lamar Jackson has a different gear, and you always have an advantage when you're a running quarterback because the angles are different, you know, and people are flat footed. You usually get to be the one that starts the run. But I mean, we've never seen anything from him that suggests, like, that's not that he's not fast. I mean, you know, Steve McNair wasn't running like a 4.3, but like he had functional mobility and he could get upfield well, and that's good. Like, the Taysom Hill comparison is weird too, because Taysom Hill runs with aggression. Like, Taysom Hill is not a gunner, but he's like an up back on special teams. Like, he's willing to like block and run downfield and make tackles. And I'm not saying that's what Malik Willis should do, but I'm also, what I am saying is that's what Malik Willis has never had to do or never like shown the inclination to do. Like, he's not a guy who's going to just like lower his head and that's good. Like, you don't want your quarterback to be that. But I don't really know, you know, he's a quarterback. Like, he's not necessarily like a freak athlete like Lamar Jackson. He's not a wildcat guy like Taysom Hill, where it's like, you know, or Jake Locker, where you can just give him the ball and he's going to be reckless and do stuff. Like, he's a quarterback. He just needs a good offensive line. Like, that's the thing. If you give him a good offensive line and fast receivers, if you give him Jalin Hyatt from Tennessee and a good left tackle, that's fine. Like, if you open it up and you run a lot of deep routes, he can rip passes off and he can make a lot of plays. Like, that's still in his repertoire. Like, none of that's changed. But what we need to understand is the offense that the Titans have with Derrick Henry, not with Tannehill, but with Derrick Henry, will not work with Malik Willis, because you have to run the ball, you know, 25 to 30 times a game. And then you have to be able to run play action off of that. And you have to be able to take snaps under center and move well out of the pocket. And again, it's not that Willis can't do that. It's just that, you know, he's already not seeing the field well and not reading coverage as well and not throwing with anticipation. Turning his back to the defense and running play action passes is not going to make that easier. So the takeaway should be, I'm not sure if 2023 is Malik Willis' season. And if it is, it will be because they got a new offensive coordinator and have completely changed, you know, their mentality. But that shouldn't change the fact that Malik Willis has the tools to be the guy eventually. Just everybody should take a step back and realize that there's only about six good quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And if you have an average quarterback, which Tannehill is, then you should just hold on to that and then roll the dice when you get into the playoffs, because there's really no other path for the Titans.
Yeah, sorry about the alarm. That's going off, by the way, to everyone listening. What can I do? This is Miami Beach at its finest. But I agree. Malik Willis just isn't ready right now, and I don't want this to be like a supremely negative episode, but yeah, it's going to take some time for him to develop. I'm not saying he won't do it. I think he has all the tools to do it, and it seems like he's a very willing learner and is willing to put in the time to make that development, but it's going to take a while, and we'll see how it goes. going forward. But I think Tannehill will be back for this week's game. If he's not, then, man, I don't know. The Titans are going to have to turn that Chiefs game into a disgusting defensive warfare, which they could do because the defense is playing lights out right now. They were incredible in this game against the Texans. They just completely shut down the run game with Damian Pierce. He was getting met with like multiple defenders on almost every run in the backfield. So the Titans, when they want to sell out to stop the run, they can absolutely do it. And there are a couple teams coming up in their schedule that they might be willing to do that, and they could. So that's a great sign. The pass defense also played very well. They made Davis Mills look like the inferior talent at the quarterback position that he is. And it was an incredible performance. Kind of annoying that the Texans even got that late garbage time touchdown, because the Titans defense deserved to get a three on that scoreboard. So shout out to them. And it shows that the Titans are a complementary type of team. When the offense needs the defense to step up for them, they do. And you know, the offense hasn't really stepped up for the defense too much this season, but I think they could do it once they finally get everyone healthy. I think that's something that we kind of forget at times. Like Treylon Burks, still their first round receiver, has not been healthy for the past couple of weeks. And Tannehill obviously is hurt right now. So once everyone is healthy, hopefully the offense can kind of meld together with the defense and form a really solid above average overall team. So we'll see. So these last two wins that the Titans have had against the Colts and the Texans, obviously it's super crucial to get these division wins in what looks like is going to be another disastrous season for the AFC South. I mean, the Jaguars just lost to the Broncos in London. They cannot put away any games. They can't win close games. The Colts put Sam Ehlinger in at quarterback for Matt Ryan this past week. It went just about as terrible as expected. They lost to the Commanders. They couldn't get anything going on offense. And it almost seems like they're tanking at this point. Like, it seems like they know they can't win the division. And then we know the Texans only have one win and they're essentially eliminated from contention. So obviously important to get these division wins. Do we care that the Titans like haven't blown these teams out, or does it just not matter? Like, at this point, a win is a win, and that's what it is.
Yeah, a win is a win, right? Like, the last two games haven't been close. You know, you kind of talked about it with the last second touchdown to Houston. Like, there was never a time in the Indianapolis game where it felt close. Like, that was after a bye week where everybody talked about how the Titans weren't getting in the red, or weren't scoring, or sorry, they weren't getting down the field often enough to be in the red zone. But when they were in the red zone, they were scoring. And then, that was kind of the opposite, where they kicked four field goals and, you know, they should have put, you know, they should have been able to score a touchdown here or there, but like, it was so atypical for them to kick four field goals, because more often than not, they turn at least two or three of those into touchdowns. So on a normal week, that would have been a much more lopsided victory on top of the pick six, but things just didn't work out that way. So that game wasn't close. You know, the Titans games against the Colts before the bye week was closer, but I don't know. That was a weird game too, because it felt like if you touched Matt Ryan, his arm would explode and he would fumble the ball. And between that and Taylor, and you know, that was the Colts giving their absolute best shot with, you know, Shaq Leonard playing, and that was when Kwity Paye was still up. Not that he's a big factor, but he's been out for the last few weeks, and that was when they still had hope, and you know, they had just beaten the Chiefs, and they had all this momentum, and they were at home, and the Titans came out and put up 24 points on them in the first half, and in former Titans fashion, they didn't score in the second half, but they still ended up winning 24-17, I believe. And, you know, it was another dominant game by the defense for most of it, and there were flashes from the offense. So I don't know. Like, it doesn't really matter how you win. It's always hard to win against your division because they know exactly what you want to do. It's not like they're ever going to be surprised by how big Derrick Henry is or, like, by how strong Jeffrey Simmons is. Like, you're never going to catch them by surprise because you play them every year. So just getting the win is important. But, you know, I think when we look back at the season, we'll forget how competitive the Colts looked like they might be early. And then, although that might be balanced out by when they play the Jaguars later in the season, because the Jaguars look like they're going to be competitive early and not so much now. So, no, I mean, just get your wins, win your division. This sounds bad, but you can be a bad team and go on a run in the playoffs. Like, it's better to be a bad team that makes the playoffs than a good team that misses the playoffs, because the good team that misses the playoffs has no chance. You know, we've seen the Giants go on runs in the Super Bowl. We saw the Titans in, 2019 go on a run and go to the AFC Championship game and lead at halftime, or almost lead at halftime, before the Patrick Mahomes, like, scramble touchdown. So, you know, the regular season is important. You have to stack wins. But with how injured this team is and just how miserable this week in, week out, like, who's going to be on the injury report, you know, Amani Hooker had a surprise injury today, and he has a shoulder issue. And, you know, it's always something. Like, Weaver missed last week with a back injury that nobody really had talked about. And, you know, each week it seems like there's somebody new who gets hurt with this strength and conditioning staff. And we've talked about it ad nauseum at this point. But, you know, the offense hasn't had their number, or hasn't had two of their top four receivers for the last, I don't know, 2.5 years. So that's been miserable to watch anyway. So just get into the playoffs and try to have the healthiest, deepest team you can when you get there. And the more the more division games you win, the quicker you can start to rest people early or start to be a little bit more relaxed with your practices week to week, so you don't hurt those guys.
Yeah, just get in and then we'll take it from there. That's kind of what this season is shouting at me. Given the general just disgusting quality of play within the NFL, I mean, the Titans could make a run in the playoffs, and they have a pretty good vice grip on the division as is. So at the very least, they're going to be the fourth seed in the AFC, and there really aren't that many good teams out there. So just get in, and then, you know, you might go on a run. The Bills and Chiefs might end up just canceling each other out. Maybe injuries happen, and you never know what can happen. So, yeah, just get these wins however you can get them, and then we'll deal with the injuries once the playoffs roll around.
And also, like, the Bills and Chiefs have unanimously been the best teams in the AFC for the past, you know, 2 years, but last year the Bengals were in the Super Bowl. You know, it's like, the Bengals were a great, fun, exciting team, but nobody saw that offensive line and saw, you know, for the most part, like, the defense. You know, granted, in the playoffs they played great and they had their ups and downs in the regular season, but nobody looked at them and thought, okay, this should be the Super Bowl favorites. Like, Buffalo and Kansas City last year in the playoffs, as well as, you know, this year, were the heavy favorites, and it where did it get them? You know, Baltimore was the one seed when the Titans knocked them out of the playoffs. What was it, back in that 2019 run, or 2018, I can't remember which one it was, back in that AFC Championship run. So, you know, like, just because you're the best, you know, everybody wants to be the best team in the league right now, and this is as Mike Vrabel as I get, but it doesn't really matter who's ahead right now. You know, the Titans are 7 games into the season. So, you know, as much as I understand it, you know, it'd be great if the Titans were undefeated and were the best in every metric and looked ready to go right now. But we don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 games. You know, the goal is to have the best team you can as you start the playoffs. And then you just want to win 3 or 4 in a row. That's the only goal.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, we simply don't know. There's so many games to go. And even if you look at the standings right now, like the Titans are technically the 2 seed, I think, right now because of the conference record. Imagine they beat the Chiefs this week and then they have the head-to-head tiebreaker over them. So, man, there's so many permutations that are still yet to play out, and anything can happen at this point. So we're taking an ad break here, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the Chiefs, the Titans' Week 9 opponent.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. As I was talking before the ad break, the Kansas City Chiefs are 5-2. The Titans have a better conference win percentage record, so technically the Titans are above them and the AFC standings, but obviously so many games left that doesn't really matter right now. The Chiefs' two losses this season, one of them came against the Bills a couple weeks ago in a 24-20 game. The Bills got a late touchdown from Dawson Knox on a Josh Allen pass. The Bills are just a great team right now, really. Their only loss, I think they only have one loss, right? They're 6-1.
Yeah, to Buffalo or to Miami.
To Miami, and that was a super weird game where the Bills ran like 90 plays or something like that. Their entire team was cramping because of the Miami Heat, which I can attest to. It's absolutely brutal, and they clearly weren't ready for that. I bet if the Bills played the Dolphins again, the Bills would probably beat them, and especially in the playoffs and in the winter months in Buffalo. Yeah, so I think the Bills are very clearly one of the top two teams in the NFL, and I think the Eagles are right up there with them. They just look like a really solid team on both sides of the ball. The Chiefs are right behind them. Their offense is humming, like they're really good. They just came off a 44-23 road win over the Niners, absolutely destroyed one of the better defenses in the league. Then they get a bye week, and then they come out of the bye week against the Titans. Not great, not what you want. I think Andy Reid has a very good record off the bye, if I'm not completely mistaken. And it's this game's in Kansas City. So honestly, all the signs are kind of pointing to maybe not a big win for Kansas City over the Titans, but definitely a win for Kansas City over the Titans. Is that how you see it too, or do you think this is one of those Mike Vrabel, I'm going to play up to my competition and come away with a win when no one is expecting it type of games?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways to look at this. Like, first of all, Kansas City is the better team. Like, I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that. And I don't mean that they're going to win every game that they play, but if you put them against, you know, 31 other teams, like, they win the shootout type games. That's not the types of games that the Titans want to be in. It, even when they were scoring 30 points a game, that's not really what they wanted. You know, they wanted to kind of grind down the clock, like, make a two-possession lead feel insurmountable, like, try to keep it close and then win at the end. That's why Tannehill has so many fourth-quarter comebacks and, you know, why the team has been so successful, because they have the best running back and typically really good defenses. So, you know, it's one of those match, you know, stylistic matchups. And, you know, we've seen the Buffalo Bills just run roughshod over the Titans, and that was, you know, admittedly bad. So, you know, there's not much you can say about that Bills game, but right now it looks like the Titans defense is going to go into this game pretty healthy. You know, Weaver practiced today. I can't imagine Jeffrey Simmons missing, even though he didn't practice. Both the starting linebackers are healthy. Elijah Molden has started the 21-day window or whatever, where he can start practicing with the team, which in the past has meant that he'll play this weekend. You know, Christian Fulton's been playing better than, you know, he has at any point in the season. He looks really good. McCreary's in tight coverage with a lot of guys. We'll see what happens with Amani Hooker, but if he doesn't go, Adams has been playing really well. Like, he had that pick six against the Colts, and he played a lot versus the Texans last week. Byard's, you know, still there. Autry, Weaver's, Autry's there, and Dupree should be back. So, you know, you basically get the defense that you want. You know, you're not going to have Harold Landry, but that's just life right now. So the defense looks good, and the Kansas City offense has not been, you know, completely, like, turnover-proof, right? Or, like, bulletproof or whatever. Like, they've thrown turnover, they've had turnovers in all but two games, a 5 out of 7. And then we know Kansas City's good. I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but
let's talk about the game. Colts game. Let's talk about the Colts game.
Let's talk about the team. Let's talk about all the teams, right? Like, and you can do this with the Titans, but so far this year, the Chiefs have played the Cardinals, terrible. The Chargers, pretty bad. You know, the Colts, bad, and they lost that game. The Bucks, bad. The Raiders, bad. The Bills, good, but they lost that game. And then San Francisco. And in the San Francisco game, they turned over the ball three. You know, the defense took the ball away three times. So, again, every team in the NFL, it, you know, counts as a win just the same as any other team. But, you know, it's not like this is a team that went into Buffalo and beat Buffalo. You know, they hosted Buffalo and lost to Buffalo. They, you know, I'm not going to go back over the list and tell you about that all again. I mean, but it's not like they're world beaters who've, you know, faced every challenge and overcome everybody. Like, they've looked as human as anybody else. And how many times have we seen the Chiefs in the regular season and they're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to run all over the Titans. Then Derrick Henry, you know, has a touchdown, and Rashawn Evans picks up a fumble and runs it back for a touchdown, and it's a completely different game. Or they're supposed to come into Tennessee, and, you know, Tennessee's on a short week after playing Buffalo on Monday Night Football, and Tennessee is missing all their starting corners, and it's going to be a train wreck. And then the Titans shut Patrick Mahomes out for the for the whole game, and they have to replace him because he's getting hit too much. So, you know, Andy Reid against the Titans, I believe, is something like 2-8, like, in his career record. So, even though he's great after bye weeks, which I think he's like 17-3, he's great. But the Titans are pretty good against Andy Reid and have been pretty good in the regular season against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in this sort of iteration. So, I you know, all that to say, the Chiefs should absolutely be favored. They should be favored by, you know, 6.5. It, you know, if they play the style of game they want to play, then it's going to be really difficult for the Titans to win. But if this turns into they can't stop the run as well as they think, and the Titans are, you know, fully bought into the running game and getting downhill, and we see Derrick Henry that we saw last week, you know, then it's a much more questionable outcome. So, you know, I don't think this is a toss up. I want to make that clear, but it's not like there's no avenue for success here, and it's not like this is the scariest Chiefs team we've seen. You know, without Tyreek Hill, their offense has had times where they look average and pedestrian. Now, anytime you have Patrick Mahomes, that won't last for long. But it, you know, they're not. You know, Travis Kelce is still great, but he's not Travis Kelce from 2 years ago. They don't have Tyreek Hill. Like, Patrick Mahomes is making other guys work, but I think this will be closer than people think. But yeah, like, I mean, at home after a full week of rest, it's a really tough spot for the Titans.
Yeah, it is. But I don't know. Like, anything can happen, and we've seen the Titans be competitive in these types of games over the past couple of seasons. So we'll see. I hope they show up. I do want to talk about what is the recipe to a win here. Just hand the ball off to Derrick Henry 30 times and hope that he can break off several long runs or sustained drives. Is that the best course of action? Because, I mean, if you look at it, really, and I've seen a good amount of Chiefs games this year, their run defense is not good. Their run defense hasn't been good ever. I swear I've never seen them actually fill in the gaps well and truly take out certain running games. And, I mean, we've seen it this year. Like, Josh Jacobs went nuclear on them. Just looked like one of the better running backs, which he has been this season, but he was getting gaping holes. Devin Singletary on the Bills. The Bills really don't like to run the ball all that much, but Devin Singletary was getting huge lanes in that game as well. So, I mean, I think the matchup kind of lends itself to the Titans being successful on offense, just because their entire offense is pretty much Derrick Henry, and he's looked fantastic. The offensive line has been run blocking so well, and given that running the ball gives you longer drives and keeps Patrick Mahomes on the field, I mean, that's the recipe, right, to winning this game. Because I don't think you're going to win a passing game shootout against the Chiefs. I don't think anyone really could, except for the Buffalo Bills, and even they didn't get into that one because the Buffalo defense is so good. But it just seems like Derrick Henry is once again the key to coming away with a win in this type of game.
Well, the weird thing is nobody in the NFL has allowed more touchdowns passing than Kansas City. You know, they've allowed 17.
Is that true?
Yep, they've allowed 17 passing touchdowns in just seven games. The Steelers are tied with them at 17, wow. And they did it in eight games. So, they're sort of the worst.
Isn't that a byproduct, though, of them getting big leads and then, you know,
well, I mean,
coming from behind?
You, I mean,
well, not the maybe. Raiders one. The Raiders one, actually, they was competitive for most of the games. So.
Yeah, I mean, they do get the ball thrown on them a lot, but that doesn't really, you know, they only have three interceptions to 17 touchdowns allowed. So, you know, they're not taking advantage of it. So, you know,
they're not overly talented on defense, I don't think. I mean, I don't really see too many playmakers. Chris Jones, obviously, and I think Quan Thornhill and Justin Reed are decent safeties, but they're not players that you're, like, completely avoiding in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, they're talented, but, you know, Frank Clark's out for this game because he's suspended, and that's their best edge rusher. Chris Jones is obviously a freak, like, and you can bet that Jeffrey Simmons is going to know that the other four, you know, Autry and Simmons are going to see another Mississippi State player on the other side and want to outdo them, but that doesn't take away from how great Chris Jones is. But, I mean, really, like, Nick Bolton, I heard Rhett Bryan today talked about, you know, Nick Bolton already has 70 tackles. That's a made-up nonsense stat. It does not matter. 70 tackles is nothing. You can put 400 tackles there. It doesn't make any difference. You know, he's a good run defender. I don't want to say
Cole,
that.
Dylan Cole might have 100 by the end of this season.
All-star. Yeah. So it's like, you know, that is not indicative of how talented you are. It just is how, you know, if somebody, I've talked about tackles on here before, like that doesn't mean anything, but he is a good player, but it's not like he's Urlacher, Keekly in his prime. You know, he's not one of those like game changing inside linebackers. Like, I think he's a good guy to have in a phone booth, but you know, we'll see. But how many years did Derrick Henry play against Zach Cunningham when he was with the Texans and he would still put up 200 yards because that's just, you know, that's how little an inside linebacker can impact a game versus a running back at times. So you're right. It is an interesting matchup because it's not like the Chiefs are especially effective. You know, they've allowed, I think they're like the second or third least amount of rushing yards. But like you said, it's because nobody runs the ball on them. Everybody's always passing the ball. You know, they've only had to stop 155 rushing attempts, which is, you know, towards the bottom of teams in the NFL. It's actually, I just looked it up, it's second least, and the team that's faced the first fewest, let me phrase this better. The team that's faced the fewest number of rushing attempts is the Titans with 150, and then the Kansas City Chiefs are second with 155. So, you know, they're very similar in that regard, and that's because both teams lead a lot. Like, you know, the Titans have gotten ahead in, I think, every game except for Buffalo, and then they've been difficult to score on, and, you know, most of the scoring comes in the second half, but the Titans are still usually in the lead, so you know, usually see more passes. Plus, they run the ball a lot, so the clock runs out quicker. But all that to say, you know, there's a lot of numbers out there that suggest that the Chiefs are a really good defense, and they're opportunistic and this, that, and other. And I don't really know if those numbers hold up to scrutiny. So we'll see. You know, hopefully Tannehill can practice and he's fully mobile and all that. But I don't know the weather. That's something, a random side note here is, I'm interested to know what the weather will be like in Kansas City, because it's always cooler, and it's going to be a cold night game with Derrick Henry in that running attack. I much prefer to have, you know, the Titans running game leaned on heavily, regardless of who's at quarterback or whatever, just because, you know, that could be an early preview of December. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Again, I don't want this to sound overly optimistic and that, you know, this is a trap game for Kansas City, blah, blah, blah. It's not. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily have to be a trap game. The Titans are a good team. You know, they're 5-2 for a reason, and they've handled their business this year, and they seem to have found their identity while they were, you know, struggling through the garbage teams in the NFL. So we'll see how good they really are and how much has changed from the Buffalo game to now, I guess, in 6 days.
Agreed, and I talk about giving the ball to Henry so many times, but obviously have to stop Mahomes at least on one or two drives in order to actually win this game. That's been difficult for a lot of defenses this season, although the Bills and the Colts seem to have the blueprint in order to do that. What would you think is the best course of action in terms of limiting Mahomes and the Chiefs passing offense, because they just hit you with so many different types of players and so many different angles that it's really difficult to limit them? But I mean, me personally, I'm sticking two guys on Kelce and then let the others beat me if they can. They've done it. Juju has kind of woken up over the last couple of weeks. Mecole Hardman is obviously very fast, but he's inconsistent. MVS is very fast, but he's pretty much only a field stretcher. What do you think the Titans should do differently, I guess I would say, than they have been over the past couple of weeks, since they haven't really faced too many good passing offenses? What do you think they should do against Mahomes to limit him really to field goals? Because we know they're going to move the ball, but the real question is going to be keeping them out of the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just kind of keep playing your game. Like, obviously, you don't do what you did against the Texans, which was more five-man fronts and all that. Like, you want to stay in a four-man front with, Simmons, like the guys we talked about earlier, like the pass rushers, like you want those guys on the field, you know, when you can have them on the field in a four-man front, and you want to be lighter on your back end, like you want to be in dime or nickel, you know, whenever you can be, and then you just play opportunistic and, you know, fast flow to the ball, and then make sure that Mahomes can't just stay back there and, you know, sit still in the pocket and not have to move. Like, you got to move him off a spot. And, he'll throw the ball, you know, across his body, like halfway through a roll. Like, he'll make bad decisions because he can make those plays work. You just have to make him pay for those. So, you know, if anybody knows how to play Mahomes, it's the Titans. Like, whether it's Bowen or Vrabel or, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, like whoever, like they've had success against the old offensive line they used to have, the offensive line they trotted in last year when they were all rookies and young guys. Like, I mean, it's nothing new for them. The only thing different about this team is that they don't have Tyreek Hill. So, you know, you just don't have to prepare for that as much. And that's going to be a positive thing. He leads the NFL in receiving yards. It's good to not have to deal with Tyreek Hill. So I don't think there's anything new you have to particularly fold in, like, especially now that they're starting to stunt a lot more with their defensive line and get more guys open and get creative that way. Like, you don't have to add in a bunch of new wrinkles. You just, you've got to stick with this, with the defense of not giving up big explosive plays for nothing. Like, you have to keep that going because, you know, they gave up one explosive play against the Texans, and it kept them from that almost shutout, that 3-point, you know, defensive performance, because it was just a long pass to Brandon Cooks. And Brandon Cooks is going to get his. He's great. But, you know, you just have to make sure that doesn't happen to you with Juju. You know, so, you know, like, if Devontae Adams beats you deep, which the Titans have really focused on not letting those guys beat him this year, but don't let the Mac Hollinses of the world beat you. Like, don't let backup guys, you know, play better than that. And hopefully with Molden in, you know, hopefully he can play, and hopefully they can prevent more of those X plays and do what they've been doing. But, you know, play the style you played the last few weeks. If something major happens and you need to adjust because it's just not working, adjust. But I don't think there's any reason why this defense shouldn't look better than they did against Buffalo with everybody on the field this weekend.
Yeah, they've been playing great, and it really is super impressive how good the Titans have been against the Andy Reid Chiefs in the regular season. Obviously, that playoff loss still stings, but hey, there's a regular season. It's not the playoffs, so maybe they can continue that impressive record on Sunday night. That's exciting, too. The Sunday night game, prime time. Just hoping to not get embarrassed like the Bills game, because, you know, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Obviously, you don't want to get blown out, but getting blown out on national TV and then all the media people are going to be like, oh, the Titans are frauds again. I just absolutely hate it. But hopefully the Titans could put on a good performance, hopefully come away with a win, but at the very least show that they belong among the AFC elite. So we're going to take an ad break here, and then we're going to come back and wrap up with Stop the Nonsense.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. Will, what is your Stop the Nonsense for this week?
So, if you've seen my mentions, I've had this conversation. Somebody named Nathan, at Nathan Cherilis, maybe how you say his name, went kind of, Mike Herndon, I was talking to him earlier today, and so I was aware of kind of the things he was tweeting, and, you know, I tweeted to him some this morning. Anyway, it got put on my timeline by Eldon English, that this guy Nathan was talking about I want to be. I'll use the exact quote. He said, when they were talking about how John Robinson is missed on first round picks, and you know, all he drafts are busts, and you know, bad players. And he was talking about Treylon Burks not being good, even though you know he was clearly good when he was in, and he was you know leading rookies in like yards per target. What anyway, all that stuff, and. So Herndon pushed back, and then he said, this Nathan guy said, I don't like the word bust. Simmons was drafted too early. He isn't a bust. He is great. Burks may be a solid wide receiver too, but he wasn't worth that pick. I don't want J-Rob fired. I want him to realize there's a problem and fix it. And it's a really good – you know, this quote is a really good encapsulation of sort of what's wrong with the ideas of what rookies should be, because – if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. It is almost impossible for a rookie to make an impact on a Mike Vrabel team. It just is. Doesn't matter who the guy is. It is very difficult. You know, you can look back. You know, Kevin Byard started on the bench. Derrick Henry started on the bench. I mean, we can go down the list. Like, there's so many players. Like, the only players who have a chance are offensive linemen. You know, like, Nate Davis was good the – you know, the back half of the season once they started to let him play more. And, you know, Nicholas Petit-Frere has been good, you know, all this stuff. But he doesn't call Simmons a bust, but he basically says that you should never draft a person in the first round who's not going to contribute immediately. Even though Jeffrey Simmons did end up playing the year, you know, the last six or eight games, whatever it is, and he had a sack in his first game, and he was great from the get-go, and, you know, he never slowed down. It's a great job of people forgetting that sometimes these guys take time, and they're always going to take time when there's veterans in front of them in this team, on this team. Like, whether it was Kyle Phillips not getting a lot of reps early because Nick Westbrook-Ikhina was there, and then he had to finally break through, and then he led the Titans in receiving the one game he was healthy, and then, like every other fun prospect, that he got hurt. And then, you know, it just – the list goes on and on, and I've talked about this a lot, but I can't believe we're still in this place where we don't understand that even if guys aren't immediate – you know, the curve, the arc of guys, I should say, the arc of careers in Tennessee are fans don't like that the Titans spent a pick on them in year one. Year two, they have a good season, and everybody's in love with them. Year three, Titans fans aren't sure if they want to pay him. And, you know, they point out all the flaws and they say, well, you know, it took this, that, and the other for them to be good. And then by year four, if they don't have a great season and the team decides to let them walk, it's why don't the Titans ever play these players? Like, this was my favorite player. I can't believe they let him go. Like, Jonnu Smith, you were my hero. When, like, when you, if you go back to year one, you're the same guy who's bad mouthing Jonnu Smith. Like, we have to get over it. Like, at a certain point, when you're one of the most successful teams in the NFL for, you know, what is it, like a 5-year period, a 6-year period, whatever it is, you just have to sort of trust the process. Like, there's going to be bumps and there's going to be mistakes, but we have got to quit acting like, you know, John Robinson is bad at drafts. John Robinson doesn't bring in talent. You know, as much as you like it or don't, that's just the arc of the way these players are going to go. So, I this is the most successful rookie class that the Titans have had in a long time. And when the guys get healthy again, it'll show up even more. But man, it is a struggle to constantly deal with this kind of stuff.
Also, do people not understand how hard it is for a GM to consistently draft well? It's almost impossible. And there's so many other factors at play other than just actually drafting the player. The coaches have to develop these players. These players have to be completely mentally bought in, which sometimes in college they're absolutely bought in. And then they get to the NFL and it's completely different and everything changes. Like, take the Seahawks, for example. John Schneider right now is getting just praised endlessly for what looks like an incredible draft class this season. What happened the past 10 years? Every draft class has sucked for them, and it's a huge reason why they haven't been able to get back to the Super Bowl, and they've kind of been middling between mediocrity for so much time. And, like, this is happening kind of with the Jets also. Joe Douglas has done a really good job building very decent to great draft classes, but he missed on Zach Wilson and it's going to end up derailing his entire tenure, it seems. So, man, it is the margin of error for GMs is like razor thin. And the fact that John Robinson has consistently produced rosters that get 9, 10, 11, 12 wins, I think should be commended. And people need to realize that it's not easy. This is not an easy job. There's a reason there's only 32 of them in the entire world, NFL GMs, I mean. And there's turnover every year. The five of them get fired every year. Five new ones come in. Some of them suck. Some of them are good. And that's just how it is. But people don't understand that every draft class has to be just A plus. It doesn't exist. But anyway, going off of that, I mentioned Zach Wilson, and he's kind of part of my stop the nonsense. I want to talk about two quarterbacks from the 2021 draft class, which, oh man, it's not looking good, guys. It's not looking very good. Justin Fields looks like the best quarterback from that draft class right now, and I hope he is, because he got a lot of unfair criticism, I would say, in the draft process and even throughout his first season. But anyway, I just wanted to focus on Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence. Zach Wilson sucks. Probably the worst starting quarterback in the league right now. I honestly think he would be like a middling backup at this point. But Jets fans were so enamored with this 5-2 start, even though they were beating teams that were starting second, third string quarterbacks. And they were high and mighty saying that, oh, Zach Wilson is playing solid ball. He's guiding the team to these victories. What are you talking about? They were completely hiding this guy behind their running game, behind Breece Hall, who was ripping off 50, 60-yard gains. And then what happens when you face a decent defense? Actually, not even a decent defense. The Patriots defense got absolutely crushed by Justin Fields and the Bears the week before. But Zach Wilson comes in and faces them. Absolutely implodes. There's three interceptions. Looks like the awful quarterback that we all know he is. And Jets fans are quiet all of a sudden because their beautiful second overall pick it has finally imploded. And they just can't deal with the fact that this dude sucks and they're going to have to draft another quarterback within the next 1 or 2 years. So, man, Jets fans, take a step back. You guys haven't won anything in forever. And your quarterback sucks. So, yeah, I don't know. That just bothered me. But I also have to talk about Trevor Lawrence, because why does the national media keep trying to prop this guy up? He's not good. He's shown absolutely nothing at the NFL level. Last year was a disaster. Yes, Urban Meyer was also a disaster, and he rightfully got blamed for a lot of Lawrence's poor performances, but Lawrence did absolutely nothing to elevate his team around him. Now this year, they finally get pieces around him. They spend a lot for Christian Kirk. They bring in Zay Jones. Travis Etienne is healthy. Their O-line isn't all that terrible. They bring in Doug Peterson, who has had really good offenses in the NFL in the past, won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. And for the first couple of weeks, it looked good. Doug Peterson had a good offense built around Trevor Lawrence. And now what's going on? Trevor Lawrence is committing so many mistakes. He can't hit normal throws, normal tight window throws. He's putting 100 miles an hour on the ball on these short routes, just completely zinging past open receivers. And yet people are still making excuses for him. They're 2-6, I think, right now. Their offense can't score points against the Houston Texans. I think they had 6 points or something like that. And yet these national media analysts keep trying to say that his margin for error in this offense is just so thin. He has to be perfect every Sunday in order to succeed. Well, guess what? If you're the first overall pick, yeah, you're supposed to be great on a consistent basis. This dude is not, and I honestly think the Jaguars might be in a position where they have to make like a Daniel Jones type of decision on this guy within the next couple of years. But don't let the national media hear that. It's all it's all the fault of the Jaguars and everything around him and not him. It's just – it's crazy how they coddle him. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Ryan beat Trevor Lawrence, like – and I know that's not technically how it goes, but, like – I mean, we've seen what the Colts look like. Like, the Colts are not a good team, and they shut them out the first time. And I think the Jaguars only scored like 20, I think it was like 21-0. And it was like kind of a struggle for them to put up points, even though they got turnovers. And then they, you know, they lost a shootout to them 34-27, which is a tough way to go. And then, like you said, like they put up 6 points on the Texans and lost. Like, that's bad. And I don't know, man. Like, they invest, they've put up money, you know, they've given him like the best player. Well, I shouldn't say that, because the receivers are good. They're, you know, he has Marvin Jones and Christian Kirk, and, you know, he's got weapons, but the only reason that their offense is moving is because of Travis Etienne. Like, Travis Etienne looks great. And it's crazy to me that no, you know, what they should be praying for is that nobody should be praying for this, but if you could copy the Titans offense, they would be more successful. And maybe not even the Titans offense with Ryan Tannehill, maybe the Titans offense with Malik Willis, because I mean, Trevor Lawrence isn't like a lost cause, but he is part of the problem way more often than he's part of the solution. You know, there's a handful of times a game where you can say, wow, I'm glad we didn't run the ball. If you're a Jaguars fan, like, other than that, like, it's got to be a constant hold your breath. And more often than not, you're disappointed because it's incomplete or more often intercepted. You know, he's in, his stats don't even do him justice, because he threw an interception in the Giants game, just like he did in the game against the Broncos, except it was waved off because of a penalty. Like, he should have had 2 back-to-back, you know, 2-minute drive interceptions to end games over the last 2 weeks, but instead he just didn't score. You know, somebody said that the last, with the game on the line, I think it's the last, maybe it's the last 8 games, like the last drives that they've had, like 6 of them have been turnovers. Like, one of them has been like, and 2 of them have been like run out of time. Like, I don't know. He just, like, maybe he has it somewhere, but I don't think he's ever going to have it in Jacksonville. I mean, I don't know if anybody can, but they've given him weapons. They've given him a quote-unquote smart offensive mind, and everything looks exactly as hard for him now as it did with Urban Meyer. Like, if you can't see that, you're just lying, or you're just trying to prove yourself right, and you're not seeing what's right in front of you. Like, it's and they'll never change him. Like, I mean, like, they'll never make a move. Like, he'll have to walk away in free agency in a couple of years, and they'll just keep throwing good money after bad there. But man, it has got to be frustrating for them, because he looks bad.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he could get it figured out, and I honestly don't mind him as like a person, but it's weird that the media just keeps holding on to hope that he's just gonna be the same guy that we saw that freshman year at Clemson. Times change, we have new evidence. At some point you have to just realize that he's not that great right now. It is what it is, but there's no need to just keep acting like he is something that he isn't. But what can we do? That's what it is. So that'll do it for us. We'll be back next week, hopefully, to recap a Tennessee Titans win over the Chiefs. As always, remember to stop the nonsense, and thank you for tuning in.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.